Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo, and I'll be your host. The segment you're about to listen to started out life as Comic Timing Episode 38, which was released on May 21st, 2007. Now, here in the glorious afterlife known as Podcast Syndication, podcast savant Ian Levenstein, the geek pastor Wayne Cordova, and I discuss religion in comics. May the deity of your choice save us all.
Hey guys, just a quick warning before we get into this episode. There were a couple of audio snafus along the way where there is some really odd echoing going along. We're not quite sure exactly whose computer was causing it. However, there will be some times where either myself or John are talking and you sort of hear us twice. I tried to get rid of it as much as possible. It's still there just ever so slightly on some things. It's not there the entire time. I don't feel it takes away from the conversation that we were having. But again, just fair warning that there might be some odd technical difficulties. So, yeah, just letting you guys know and enjoy the episode because it's damn good. I promise. God says so. All right, I shouldn't say that. On with the show.
Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 38 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levenstein, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. Wayne Cordova returns to Comic Timing for the first time since our Civil War episode ages ago. Him and John Mayo discuss religion with myself as we get into the religious take that you can find in Marvel, Independent, and DC Comics. And I hope that we do it justice. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levenstein, and welcome to episode 38 of Comic Timing. Yeah, we actually had a part one and just a part one in the last episode, which is a bit of a surprise. So we're going to have ourselves another episode here, and joining us are two returning guests who haven't been on for a while. Let's start with the guy who hasn't been on for the longest time first. The last time we had him on, we were all bitching and moaning about Civil War being late.
Yeah.
How long ago that was.
I think that's the last time I actually had a podcast out, too.
Oh, great.
Oh.
He is Wayne Cordova. He's the geek pastor, Radio Wayne. And what's the name of your other one, man? I always forget it.
The Adventures of Wayne and Tina.
There you go.
Which is the podcast I do with my wife. But yeah, man, I haven't. I've actually been on other people's podcasts more than I've actually done my own in the year 2007.
Well,
I know that feeling.
I have to tell you, it's a lot easier to edit that way.
It is. I mean, it's great. I steal from other people's feeds. You know.
Yeah. That's
sometimes I don't even play my own podcast. It's just Crankcast all the way or something.
Yeah. I can actually see that working. What you're hoping is that your listeners notice at least.
I've gotten one email, at least, so.
Hey, I recently got an email from somebody asking where GeekSpeak was, so I'll have to put out a GeekSpeak report eventually, but you and I are sort of on the same pace when it comes to that, at least, with one of my podcasts.
Yeah, sure, that's a thing. Just if you're a podcaster, just don't move.
Yeah.
Like, that's
yeah.
The thing, is just stay where you are and don't ever change your life, ever, which would make for some really interesting podcasts.
As a guy who started working after not working at all and just having, you know, going to school every day and having a hell of a lot less time to edit now, I agree with that entirely.
Oh, yeah. Editing is just like it's a non-existent thing anymore anyway.
Oh, yeah. One guy who knows all about editing, I hope, and one guy who hasn't been on in a while, but he's back and he'll be on in at least two out of the next three podcasts. Yes, we have him signed to at least a two out of three podcast deal. It is the comics pundit himself, John Mayo.
Hey, how you doing?
What's going on?
John Mayo.
Not too much. What's this editing you guys are talking about? I mean, I just recorded with Chris Marshall for mine. My editing's going to be okay. We start the conversation here. We ended it there. Done!
What are you, talking about?
Was your mic even on? Is that the...
Yeah, well, again, I told you, I want to start the Dead Air podcast eventually, all right?
And you know what? People will subscribe.
Oh, of course, of course.
Hey, it works for Just Bill.
Oh!
Oh!
And here we are with at least one Just Bill reference in the show, so we're all set here. Let's get into the main topic. And one of the reasons why Wayne is back on the show here is because he's an expert at this sort of thing, I hope, and that's, of course, religion. So we're going to be talking about religion and comics. And this is actually the winner of our contest to get a topic for Comic Timing. And this was submitted by Tim, otherwise known as Titans Together on the forums. He was going to join us for this, but he decided not to join us, and that's perfectly fine. I understand that he was a bit shy about it, but again, thanks for the suggestion, Tim. And again, I will be shipping your stuff out soon. I'm a late-ass dude. What can I say, all right? But your prize is still coming.
Right. So what's he getting for submitting the idea?
He's actually getting a John Cassaday poster of Captain America number one back when he was doing Marvel Knights Captain America.
Cool.
And he's also getting a copy of Sin City Volume 1.
Yeah, he gets that for not being on the podcast.
Yes.
I love that he gets a copy of
wrong.
I know. I just love the fact that he's getting a copy of Sin City for requesting the religion podcast.
Exactly. It couldn't be more perfect when you think about it.
Oh, no. That's great.
Hey, well, again, the reason why the contest even happened is because I'm giving up my Sin City number one because I got that special edition at CGS 200, so I didn't need my regular copy. So
cool.
Yeah, but anyway, religion and comics. This is what the forum topic says, so this is what we'll get into here. Most people do not usually associate religion and comics. However, the link is there. Angels, miracles, golems, gods, prophecies, holy myths, and legends. What is your take on how religion is portrayed in comics? Is there a character you relate to more to his or her religion affiliation? What strengths and weaknesses do you find in the portrayal of religion and religious characters? Let us know. Join in the topic that Tim suggested, along with other guests as well, and you know who those are. So here we go with religion in comics. I think in general, we'll just start off with a nice general question about how do you feel religion is portrayed in comics, whether it's a positive or negative light usually, and we'll start off with you, Wayne.
Man, I mean, that's an awesome question. I mean, the cool thing is first off, just, thanks for having me on. I love being the token religion guy. Yeah, it seems that every time I put up, that post that keeps running in the CGS forums about, ask Radio Wayne, and it's always, like, a bunch of religion questions, and I'm always kind of holding my hand up going, hey, I like comics, too, But
pigeonholed, buddy.
Oh, I know it. Yeah, that's what I get for, having a show called The Geek Pastor. I mean, to tell you the truth, just when it comes to religion in comics, it's the same in, when it comes to, religion in any kind of form of entertainment and stuff. I really feel like, the way that it's portrayed is really kind of, it's all in the eye of the beholder, and it's all in the eye of the writer, more so than this, than the artist, I think. Just because I really feel like that, depending on what you're reading, there's so many different views on religion and where people stand and where they choose to worship or follow or where they don't choose to, that's why I love this medium. So it's like, I can flip any different, kind of comic and really find a different view. And so, I mean, my hope anyway, just when it comes to that, is that it would kind of, to quote Fox News, it would be fair, it would be balanced, and it would be more than, it would just be real, that it would just be a real everyday thing. I really can't, as a Christian, I can't stand watching Christian movies because those things are so over the top and nothing real, ever really happens in those kind of films, in terms of, real life kind of stuff. And I'm like, if it's a part of somebody's life and it comes through in a comic and stuff, cool. If not, it doesn't have to. As a Christian or a pastor, I don't need religion in my comics in order for me to get closer to God. If I left, where I stood with God up to Dan DiDio, I don't know where I'd be. Probably on Earth number 12. I don't know. But
you have a pantheon to deal with, that's for sure.
Exactly. I mean, as far as the way I feel like it's portrayed, I love it when it's just natural. It's real, depending on whoever it is. One of the coolest things that I loved watching was, I think it was Infinite Crisis number 6 or 7, where they all ended up at the church,
Yeah.
And it was just a natural thing right after, I think it was 7, because it was right after, all the battles had gone on and stuff. And you just saw, obviously, sometimes, you see it after every kind of disaster or something. People usually just kind of gravitate towards a church, whether they're religious or not. It's kind of a meeting place, per se. It's a safe haven. And it was just really cool just to kind of see some of the conversations between a couple people. And it was even neat. It was just like, you know, Mr. Terrific was there, and he's like, well, I'm an atheist, you know. But he was there anyway because, man, he was there to support his, you know, fellow fallen and his brethren, you know, and that kind of stuff. So
sure.
I just like it when it's portrayed in a real light like that, you know, something that was just, hey, let's all gather here, let's do it. If it comes across in conversation, if it comes across in whatever, I mean, I don't, you know, want to pick up my Batman comic and just before he goes to beat up the Joker, to me it would be out of place to have him kind of pull the Batmobile over and ask for a blessing from the Father. It's just, wow, where did that come from, you know? But with certain people, it kind of comes off natural, and I love that kind of realism when it's portrayed, you know, where there's a struggle, because there typically is. There's an internal kind of struggle that happens a lot, you know, where people deal with doubt or they deal with faith, and that's where I'm the most comfortable. If I feel like it's getting pushed at me or if it's too over the top, that's when I start to check out. And this coming from a guy who, you know, reads books about guys that can turn themselves into blocks of ice. So
well, I'm actually kind of glad that you brought up Infinite Crisis, because that was actually one of my favorite moments in the book, where they're all gathered there in the church, because if memory serves me right, it was people of all religions that gathered there at the church.
Absolutely, yeah.
It was just a gathering place. You know, it was a spiritual moment where people just got together and were just either praying for their, you know, in their own religion, or just the fact that they were there was enough.
Yeah, it made it into a safe haven. You know, it was a safe place to go where everybody could just kind of be together.
Exactly.
Well, and it was a great scene because it gave so much in the way of character moments for various characters.
Yeah.
You see Blue Devil, who's paying a physical price for being in the church, you know, because he's part devil and stuff. You know, like you said with Mr. Terrific, you learn a bit more about him. There were some people saying, hey, shouldn't we be out doing something versus just standing around? You know, there were so many opportunities, and they took advantage of them for learning more about the characters, having it give them more depth and stuff like that. That, to me, is an excellent use of religion in comics.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, there are a lot of more spiritual than religious characters out there. However, I think it could also stem to the religion, because you don't really see Spider-Man prep his religion that often. And,
no.
And yet
no.
He's a very spiritual person. I mean, obviously, I mean, come on. I mean, with the fact that he's, you know, so related to, well, his you know, his dead uncle and all that, and all that's happened to him, he believes almost in the presence that his, you know, his uncle is looking over him, watching to make sure he's doing the right thing. And,
right.
I mean, that's all about, you know, being that spiritual type. However, I actually, like, it strains in my memory to think if I've ever actually seen Spider-Man in the comics sitting there at church.
No, I think the only times we've seen him in the proximity of a church are the whole bell tower scenes with Venom.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, that's the closest thing I could recall, and I mean, and if anything, it's like, you know, I just seem to kind of even recall him even mentioning a couple times, well, I'm not a real religious kind of guy, and there's, you know, there's been, you know, situations and stuff like that, but it's like Spider-Man's not the kind of guy that I would expect, you know, just to be, you know, hanging out in a church and stuff. Now Daredevil, totally different story.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like, you know, you wonder when you read those kind of stories and you see Daredevil. I mean, again, I love that. I love those kind of struggles, and I love how, you know, just how he views the church as, you know, as place to go.
Well, plus, I mean, you kind of got to have that when your mother is a nun.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's just the, you know, it's those kind of things. It's like, man, when it's natural and it works for certain characters, other characters, when it's portrayed in the wrong, I just can't buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, there actually have been some instances where, like, for instance, with Superman Returns,
right.
Many people, and I myself included, have made jokes, oh, Jesus Kal-El has returned. I mean,
right.
You know, I mean, with all of the religious, you know, you know, you could relate that movie to Christianity almost entirely there. I mean, with him floating in space with his arms out because on the cross. Other instances where, you know, like the speech of Jor-El and all that. That actually is the sort of thing that I want to sort of shy away from in comics. I felt like that was almost sort of like jamming it down your throat at times.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's that, and it's almost using it like a writing crutch.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, you know, we've got this great story over here. Let's just use that and substitute Superman in place of it or whatever.
Right. Well, and the classic idea of Superman, you know, and oddly enough, you know, written by two Jewish writers, is the fact that people over time have taken the story of Superman and turned it into, you know, just a direct, you know, comparison to Jesus. The Father sends the Son down to Earth, and the Son, taking up this Messiah role, he's all powerful, chooses to be a humble farm boy. You know, I mean, chosen whether or not, you know, that's debatable, but you know, but he's a humble little farm boy versus a humble carpenter, and you know, and he goes through all those kind of motions, and it's like, okay, we kind of get that as comic book readers and even as movie watchers, and when Superman Returns just kind of amped that up. Especially with the Marlon Brando voiceover stuff, you know, it really acted like they were like, okay, let's make him more iconic than he already is.
You don't have to do that. He's Superman, you know.
Exactly.
When a character has been around since the early 1900s, you do not need to remind us that he is a status symbol and that, you know, he is beloved by many a fan out there.
Right. Exactly.
Got a movie.
Right. I know. It's like, you know, that's why you had the big budget, because people were going to come to see him anyway.
Exactly.
You know, and it's just one of those things where it did not come across as natural. And I think that when you're going to portray religion, whether it's in a film or in comics and stuff, if it's natural, if it's part of the character's everyday life, and you can really tell, you know, anything in dialogue and comics when something just really seems forced. Whether it's a religious comment or a political comment, you know, like you know, Oliver Queen, I could totally see him spouting off on politics,
sure,
you know.
Sure.
But if you were to take those same word balloons and you were to pop them on somebody like, I don't know, The Flash, it just does not seem like it's natural. It's not a natural fit. And that's when it's like, you know, it's easy to just kind of turn that off when you kind of face that. You know, the one thing that I did like was. I did like the interaction between Superman and Daniel, the priest from the For Tomorrow storyline. Didn't really like the For Tomorrow storyline, but just the interaction between him and the priest was really cool, and just kind of it flowed to me, you know, and as far as I could see, because I could see somebody, whether it was Superman or anybody else, having a free flowing conversation with a priest in that way.
Yeah, it's funny. I think that would make for an interesting Smallville episode.
Oh, yes.
Centering around Clark and you know, the priest or whatever in Smallville, with Clark kind of coming to grips of his storyline is similar to the whole, you know, Jesus Christ stuff, yet, you know, he doesn't feel like he's a god. He doesn't want to be a god. You know, all that kind of a stuff.
Right.
And kind of the what parts will he accept, what parts will he not, and kind of juxtapose the two storylines versus, you know, using Superman and aping the religious storyline.
Right, and that's actually something that's surprising to me that they haven't pulled that out yet, because just because of the natural, you know, way that, you know, you're a farm family in Kansas, small town, typically folks in that kind of area are kind of solidly tied into, you know, their faith, you know, and small town life like that. I mean, like, sometimes life totally revolves around the church and stuff, and I never quite saw the Kents portrayed in Smallville as kind of being church-going folk, you know what I'm saying, and them having that, because that would have been a really neat dynamic just to kind of see, especially early on in the early seasons of a young Clark maybe kind of going to a pastor or a priest, going looking for guidance and saying, hey, what, you know, can the world really fall on one person's shoulders?
And I wouldn't be surprised actually if we get something like that. Perhaps now that this next season probably be the last season of Smallville.
Hopefully.
So I. And I admit, I'm actually first watching season one now. I finally gave in. Because people were telling me, all right, give it a shot. I'm like, all right, fine, I'll give it a shot. I'll watch the first couple seasons. I'll see how it's going.
However, just stop at three.
Yeah.
I'll try my best. But the problem is I'm also watching Stargate SG-1 right now. So to say the least, it's going to be a while until I'm actually, like, caught up with anything.
You're like the Adam Murdo of TV watching.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, literally. I am actually, at the same time as I'm watching the 10th season of Stargate, as it's being shown on TV, I'm actually currently one episode away from finishing season 3.
Cool. Yeah. You know, I got another really cool show to show you. It's about a young, you know, black family called the Huxtables. It's called The Cosby Show. It's really funny and stuff that happened a little while ago.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. But look, but in all seriousness, though, it would be a great way to sort of end the show, sort of put a capper on the show, if he goes to see a priest or something like that and, you know, has an experience where he realizes that he doesn't want to be this hero, that as it were, and, you know, perhaps reveals some things about his, you know, true nature to the guy and asks him whether or not I should, you know, embrace it or whether or not I should just be the small town guy. Because he really has that choice to make at this point. Specifically in the show and in the comics as well, he's had to make that choice whether or not to be Clark or Superman.
Right. Well, and according to, you know, comicbookreligion.com, he's Methodist, so he would go see a Methodist, you know, pastor and stuff to to go and see him. Although I'm not so sure, you know, how a, you know, Kryptonian could, you know, just follow, you know, in those footsteps. You know, I guess that's like from your family, you know?
Yeah. And by the way, just to mention the forced religion, how many people here have read, and again, I'm going to mention blasphemy here just by even mentioning Chuck Austin's name, but who here has actually read the Draco storyline from X-Men?
The Nightcrawler?
Yeah, with Nightcrawler.
Yeah, I have.
Okay. Now, that whole storyline revolved around Nightcrawler pretty much finding out that he is a demon child.
Right.
And yep. Not only that, but previously in the run, this like sect of I'm not sure whether it was a Christian sect or a Catholic sect, whatever it was, but I know that that Nightcrawler was a priest at one point, and that they wanted to get Nightcrawler as Pope. So I guess that would be Christian, correct? Catholic. Catholic. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, Catholic. Okay. I'm the Jew here. I'm trying to paste this together. But, it was a Catholic sect that wanted him to become Pope. Some demon reasons or something along those lines, and he finds out he was never even really a priest in the first place. It was a major retcon, and I really didn't like that at all. That's another part of the whole religion aspect that I try to, that I hope they try to dissuade from using, where if a character is religious, to try and retcon them away from not being religious to the point where they even decide that he's a demon child, I'm not quite sure if that's the right way to go with any character.
Well, I mean, that was a case of Chuck Austin didn't understand the character.
Yeah.
The core aspects of Nightcrawler is the whole, he looks like a monster, but he's not. In
right.
this particular case, he looked like a demon, and he was not. And he was more angelic in the inside, if you will, kind of a thing. And it was the whole metaphor about the character. Making him, you know, very religious and stuff like that they built up over the years, I thought was a good move. It really built his character and gave him some depth or whatnot. Turning him into a priest, I thought was a questionable move, whatever. But then the whole kind of about face, no, that never really happened. It's not just that he looks like a demon, he really is a demon. I mean, that totally undercut the very core of the character for me, and I was very upset by that storyline.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to Nightcrawler, and I wasn't all too familiar with the Chuck Austin storylines and stuff, because I, at that point, had already checked out of X-Men continuity.
Yeah.
But the funny thing about Nightcrawler is the portrayal of him that I really, really enjoyed was Alan Cumming's portrayal of him in X-Men 2, the movie.
Yeah.
Because I just felt like there was just enough of that understanding that here's the idea of this, you know, this mutant who looks like a demon, but he's actually on the other side of the coin, you know, when it comes to that kind of faith.
Yeah.
And that's, I was really comfortable with that. I really liked that. It seemed natural and all that, but I really do like the idea, just in normal continuity, of having Nightcrawler be this devout Catholic character who, you know, man, that's just such a weird pairing of this demon-like, you know, looking character who's a devout Catholic. And even the idea when he was, like, you know, studying to become a priest, I was like, that might be cool altogether. And I really felt like there was a missed chance for either a storyline or a break-off series or something, really just to be able to kind of focus in on that life of that character.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? The way he was portrayed in X-Men 2 actually reminded me a lot of the way he was portrayed in the animated series from the 90s.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, where I felt they also got the character very right. They made him a religious character, but not, you know, not nearly as religious as he was at some point in the comics. However,
right, exactly.
You got the basic idea of the character that he was on the side of angels, even though he looked the way he did. And when they decided to make him the you know, the actual demon child, it actually takes away from his mutation as well.
Absolutely.
I was going to say,
what's he doing on the team, you know?
Exactly, yeah, because, I mean, that's pretty much saying that his mutation is the fact that he can teleport. Well, no, that's not the character. He gets his skin because his mother's mystique. Okay, that makes perfect sense.
Well, all of his half-siblings or whatever also had the blue skin, also could teleport.
Exactly.
His powers were strictly genetic and not mutation.
Yeah, yeah. Which was, again, ruining the character there, and at this point it's barely even in canon anymore. Most people try to forget it. But the fact that the story was even tried, again, says that he didn't really have a true, you know, idea of the character. But
well, and it speaks poorly of the editor, too. I mean, not only did it undercut everything about Nightcrawler, but Nightcrawler, the religious aspect of his character is, you know, one of his defining things. You've got that, the swashbuckler aspect, and, you know, really, that's, I don't want to say all of the character, but you know what I mean? Those are the highlights.
Sure.
Oh, absolutely. And I really feel like that Nightcrawler is just, he's just one of those characters that has the most depth to him that is rarely handled correctly. You know, and it's just so much could be done with this character, and I really believe he could be such a major player in the Marvel universe if somebody with enough vision would let him do that. You know, and aside from that, every aspect of his life, I really believe that, you know, his devout faith, the swashbuckler aspect, all that kind of stuff, just really makes him a fun character.
Exactly. Yeah, and I mean the fact that now he seems to be seeming a bit more like himself now that Brubaker's writing him in the Uncanny run, which I've actually been enjoying a lot. And I think that they're probably going to end up focusing a bit more on Nightcrawler once they actually get back down from space where they are right now.
And good.
I would not be surprised if actually once this huge crossover is out of the way, we do get a bit more of the character of Nightcrawler there. Even if they do decide to deal with his, you know, quote-unquote Draco things that were going on, we're going to see more of that spiritual side because Brubaker knows how to write spirituality.
I'm looking forward to picking up that series in trade because I've heard, you know, I like Brubaker, but I really like him in large chunks. You know, not the man personally, but, you know, but his writing.
Brubaker.
Really. I'll have a side, please. You know, but just one of those things where, man, I really like reading his stuff several issues in a row, you know, really just to kind of pick up on the direction he's headed. So I'm looking forward to picking that up and just seeing what he's done with the X-Men in general, but really with some of my favorites that are in there, like Nightcrawler.
Yeah, and also it is a series that actually benefits from reading it together because it starts off slow. The first three issues or so are a bit on the you know, slow building side, but then once he actually gets into the storyline, he gets into the storyline, and he really, really gets you in. Getting it in trade is definitely a good thing, so you're going to really enjoy that.
Now, the thing about Nightcrawler and just the rest of his family per se and stuff, I mean, he's really the only one that's as far as just religion goes that, you know, that he carries that devout Catholic idea and all that kind of stuff. There's nobody else. There was nobody in his family that really influenced that, was it?
I'm going to say not the demon father. I'm going to say
maybe influenced them the other way.
Probably not the evil mutant mother.
Right.
Probably the gypsy upbringing, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
That's actually where I was going to go with that, because I do know that's actually one of the things that, you know, he was around it so often that sort of drove him to it. But, yeah, but again, another thing what I always loved about the character is you could see even further why he would go to the side of light because of the way that his mother was. You know, the fact that he finds out that his mother is this mutant that's done all of these terrible things. And here he is, you know, Nightcrawler, who's not exactly anywhere near that. And it proves what an upbringing can do to you because, well, he was not raised by Mystique. He was raised by the gypsies.
Maybe it's one of those things, too, where, you know, he carries that paying for the sins of the mother or the father kind of thing. And there's kind of like that penance portion of it, you know, where he's like, if I devote my life to this, it almost makes up for the sins of my family.
That's true. Yeah. That.
Well, and there's also the whole nature nurture, you know.
Oh yeah.
There.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And I think he's definitely a proof right there of the whole nature versus nurture thing, quite frankly. So,
You grow up with gypsies, you'll be a good guy.
Exactly. Let's all remember that.
Didn't that work for Quicksilver? Was he one of the ones with the gypsies, or no? Am I wrong on that?
That would be Scarlet Witch.
That would be Scarlet Witch. I think they were together, though, weren't they?
That's what I'm thinking.
Actually, yeah, that didn't work out so well.
All right, so scratch the good guy part.
Good theory. 50-50 chance.
It's not so much.
It's possible. It's certainly possible. Yeah, anyway, let's move on here. Now, one thing that also gets portrayed a lot in comic books is the afterlife. And it's usually portrayed differently by pretty much every company out there. I'll give you an example here. Even in DC Comics, we've had stuff like the Speed Force, where, you know, when you die and you're a speedster, you end up in the Speed Force, and that's where you live out your life in peace and harmony. And then, when the story suits you, Kevin Smith had Green Arrow up in heaven with what appeared to be Barry Allen sitting right up there in heaven.
So right.
We've had many different types of you know, the afterlife portrayed there.
Green Arrow was always fast with women, so maybe he's part of the Speed Force.
I was going to go for another explanation of, you know, Kevin Smith is so slow of a writer, he wrote that before the Speed Force existed.
Yeah, he started writing that in about 1986, and it came out. Yeah, but in all seriousness, though, I mean, we do have many different ideas of exactly what happens in the afterlife in
right.
Marvel and DC and all that. How close are any of these to actual, I mean, religion? I know that they take their obvious inspirations from religion, but
right.
are there any parallels that you yourself can draw in?
Well, I mean, like, the first fact is just, you know, in the Christian faith, heaven is a real place. Hell is a real place, and that's, you know, and that's part and parcel, you know, that's the center as far as, you know, where paradise is and stuff. It's a place. It's a real place. When you leave this life, which is technically your temporary life, when you're done, man, you're heading over to heaven in paradise, where you can spend your eternal life. You know, same way, vice versa, in hell, you can spend your eternal life. And their actual physical locations. You know, I can't draw you a map right now, but I'll tell you when I get there. I will haunt you in your dreams.
I will hold you that.
I will haunt you. It's just one of those things where, yeah, they are you know, physical locations and stuff. And so, you know, when they're portrayed like that in comics, it's really cool because everybody's got an idea of if you're a believer in heaven or not. Everybody's kind of got that idea of what that place would look like or where it would be. Is it full of clouds? Are the streets made of gold? Are there nonstop Twinkies at your doorstep? You know, it's just what I know. That's my idea. But, it, you know, it's just like everybody's got their thoughts and their ideas. So it's really cool to kind of see different artists especially kind of conjure up what their thoughts are. The only thing that, you know, that I wish is that there was some more solid consistency. You know, that there would be some more, you know, hey, let's – not like, hey, let's have a staff meeting and figure out what heaven looks like, you know. But actually do decide, hey, you know what, in the DC universe, what is it? You know, are there different levels of things? Are there places that you go? You know, is the Speed Force – if you're in the Speed Force, does that actually mean you're dead? Or does that mean you're trapped in a dimension?
Yeah.
You know, what does that mean for all these things so that we can – kind of get our stories straight, you know, and because it would be so neat to be able to kind of have some of this like afterlife stuff intertwine, you know, hey, if you're in hell, what does that place look like? Who rules that place? And that's where for me it becomes less of a, because again, I read comics for entertainment, you know what I'm saying, and I don't read it to get my spiritual growth out of it and stuff, although there's some cool stuff there that, you know, does cause me to think, you know. But I read it for entertainment, and so by reading it for entertainment, I love comics. I like the consistency of an editorial staff that knows what things are, you know. And I love, you know, creative license in some instances, but I really love it when everybody's together on the same page in a certain area. So, you know, like with the way that it's taken care of in DC – we've seen so many different portrayals, and one of the things that I was kind of thinking about was back when in a storyline in the Teen Titans where they were closing the door, kind of quote, on the door of death.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
I'm even thinking, I'm like, well, where is this place? You know?
Cleveland.
Yeah, probably. You know, where's this place? How did they get there? And really, what does it mean? Because they closed the door, and we've still had people come back.
Yeah.
My entire thinking when it came to Infinite Crisis, you know, and even 52 to some extent, was that that was going to close the door on death and kind of lessen the, hey, you know, this dead character has returned to life kind of thing, you know? That was one of the things I was really looking forward to in the whole DC Universe was, you know, when Dan DiDio was saying death doesn't mean anything anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. And now we're going to make it mean something by kind of shutting that door.
Well, they need to put a deadlock on the door, because anytime Kryptonian punches anything, it just, you know, bounces loose, slams shut again. But something,
it just gets crazy, you know? But that's the case. I mean, it's like, you know, when they do stuff like that, I remember reading that story going, I don't even know where this place is. You know, where did they find that door?
Sure.
And so I think that if you're going to create consistency on the planet that you're on, well, then do it out in the heavens too. Do it in hell. Figure out what that's going to look like at least, or what it's going
to
be.
See, it's funny to me how they seem to have more of a consistency with ancient gods than with current religion. I mean, like we've had pretty consistent, you know, portrayal of stuff like Asgard. Asgard always looks like Asgard. You know, even when it was over New York City, and the only book that actually mentioned that it was over New York City was Thor.
Right.
You know, it still looked like Asgard.
And nobody else noticed. That's New York City.
Exactly. I mean, come on, who looks up in New York City? You know, please.
Right.
And I mean, then you've got stuff like Olympus when it comes to DC, which, I do like the fact that we have Asgard in Marvel that's, you know, the more popular in Marvel, and then we have Olympus, which is more popular in DC. However, we still have characters from both showing up from time to time, like Hercules, for example, shows up in, you know, Marvel Comics and in DC Comics. Ares is now in Marvel Comics, and he's also in DC Comics. Thor showed up in DC Comics. A lot of people forget that. He's been in DC Comics a couple times.
Yeah, but really, Marvel handles that stuff a lot better.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from the Wonder Woman pantheon and all that stuff, you know, Hercules, Thor, Ares, I mean, all of those are, you know, very well handled and stuff on the Marvel side. DC, really, again, aside from the Wonder Woman, there's not much.
No, DC kind of creates their own mythology. You know, when it comes to that, they use some of the same characters and some of the characteristics, but they create their own. And Marvel, I agree, man, does a really great job at kind of taking the characteristics and the history that goes beyond the comics and bringing it, you know, to live picture, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that has something to do with the fact that Marvel is, quote-unquote, the realer universe. You know, the fact that in Marvel there aren't that many, you know, made-up places, at least in the United States. You know, they like to make up their own countries and, you know, nowhere or in Latveria. But most of the places, you know, that are in the United States are going to be in the United States. We're not going to have a Metropolis or Gotham City, that sort of stuff. So it sort of makes sense to me that Marvel continuity draws their myths from actual myths.
They should have a better handle on that, that's right.
Exactly,
that makes sense.
As opposed to, say, you know, DC, where a Kryptonian came from the sky.
Right.
He came with his own sun god.
That's it.
Oh, God. What is it?
Which is something that they really haven't messed with a lot, you know, in the modern times. You know, I really thought they were going to. There was, I can't even remember when it was, but it was several years ago that you kind of, am I wrong? Like, some issues of Superman actually had Superman saying stuff like "Great Ryo" again.
Yeah.
That was certainly pre-Crisis on Infinite Earths. I'm trying to think if we've seen it recently. I
there was something that popped up that he had said it.
Some of the Supergirl stuff in Kandor, wasn't it?
Yes.
No, Ryo definitely did come up in that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just some of the stuff. It's like, hey, you know, let's get a little consistent with that. That'd be great to just kind of pull that out, because I just really think that, yeah, again, man, if something's going to be a part of something's history, or if it's going to be important to somebody's life, put it out there, you know? And I think right now we're just kind of we've been in a phase of, hey, whatever works best for that book in particular, mm-hmm. let's go with that.
Yeah.
Rather than creating, you know, one big picture for the whole universe.
And, you know, one thing that I got to bring up also is the fact that independent books do a terrific job on this stuff, too. I mean,
oh, yeah.
One of my favorite books that I'm reading right now is Fallen Angel. and that's an IDW book. Originally, it was DC, but it wasn't actually in DC continuity. It was outside of it, and the job that they're doing on that is absolutely terrific, and it focuses around a character that, again, this is a bit of a spoiler here, but it's basically just the character itself. They recently revealed her origin, where we find out that she actually is literally a fallen angel, that she was one of God's angels, and she's now living on the Earth and, you know, defending Bete Noire, which is a really messed up city. I mean, really, really messed up. I mean, stuff happens there that would not happen elsewhere. It's a very mystical city, and it makes sense to have a defender like this fallen angel here. But not only just that, and again, this is a major spoiler here as well, but not entirely. They actually just introduced into Fallen Angel Linda Supergirl. They got around it.
You know, no, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
How?
They got around it by not mentioning that her last name. However, the previous defender of Bete Noire was a character who was a angel-like person named Linda.
Hmm.
And
are they collecting that in trade?
They are. This actually just happened, so you're going to have to wait a bit for it, but they are actually putting Fallen Angel in trade, but Peter David did what he wanted to do. He got his character back.
See, that Linda thing, I mean, that, you know, Peter David's Supergirl run, you know, was interesting, to say the least. It was one of the things where I felt like, didn't have to be Supergirl in order to be that character. You know, I mean, I love David's, you know, writing and stuff, but, you know, but it definitely made it interesting, you know, because people do view, you know, the Superman family almost to be a, you know, again, like there's, you know, that whole Messiah complex, the whole kind of saving angel thing. There was an issue of Superman just recently about a woman who had prayed to Superman, basically, and kept calling him her angel. And it just so happened, it was coincidence, that she would cry out for help and Superman would be nearby within earshot and he would come to her rescue over and over again, up until there was just one time that he was too far away, you know.
Yeah.
In the front cover, kind of replaced his cape, you know, with wings and stuff like that.
I thought that was a really good issue.
Oh, it was a great issue. You know, I mean, it was very different, kind of one of those really cool kind of standalone Superman stories, which I really feel like a lot of Superman stories need to kind of just go back to that. Hey, let's tell a good story in one or two issues. You know, I really feel like that's where Superman does really well at.
Well, and there are enough Superman titles, they should be able to do that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. Please get this back on track. All right, do us all a favor. It would just be very nice to have Superman books come out on time. The world would be a better place that way. That's all I'm saying. All
right. Well, I mean, I agree with that, but because of the delays on Action Comics in particular, we've gotten things like, I believe, that storyline with the...
Right, that's one of them.
Yeah.
The Prankster one, which was really good, was in there. I mean... So, I mean, we are getting some good stuff, some good done-in-one stories to fill in those gaps.
Which is
good.
It's
ironic.
Which is good, yeah. But, I mean, what I'm thinking in my head right now, and again, this is a little bit off-topic, but I want to say it anyway. What I'm thinking in my head now is they got to learn their lesson here, that these Hollywood creators and all that, don't go with them unless they're proven to be on time.
Oh, man, I was just listening to the latest CGS episode. It was their episode 250, and they're going through questions, and that was one of their questions that they all had to go around and answer. And I was right with those guys, because I'm like, you know what, I could care less if, you know, the writer of Wonder Woman was also a writer on Grey's Anatomy.
Sure.
I really could care less if the writer of Lost is writing, you know, Ultimate Wolverine and Ultimate Hulk. You know, it just... That kind of stuff, it bugs me, because I feel like, A, they're taking really good jobs, you know, from, you know, real comics creators. And number two, I mean, outside of, I really believe, you know, like Joss Whedon, maybe JMS sometimes, some really good stories have come from those guys, but not a lot of consistency. You know, I mean, Joss Whedon is really probably the only one I can really say in recent history, you know, who's one of those kind of breakout artists that has brought a lot of consistency to some storytelling. But yeah, those, you know, I mean, the CGS guys were covering that, you know, with a real, you know, some real good thought to just go away, Hollywood, you know. Or if you're not going to go away, write a lot, you know, while you're on hiatus from your TV show, you know. Write out a ton of scripts for the summer, and that's it.
And plus, there's a previous episode of Comic Timing where we get in depth on this, so go ahead and check our archives for that episode. Yeehaw.
Cha-ching!
Yeah,
right. But going back to Fallen Angel, and I guess the Supergirl as well, the fact that we have these, you know, these fallen angels, we have people like Zor-El as well, who was an angel that was, I guess, fallen. His, I don't know the full story behind Zor-El, but if I remember correctly, he was actually an angel that fell from heaven. You know, I mean, we have these different portrayals of angels and such in comic books, and it's as much story as it is religion. But when it's done well, oh, it is done well. And again, like I said, if you're not picking up Fallen Angel, go ahead and do yourself a favor and pick it up, because it is some of the best stuff Peter David has ever put out. And I'll straight up say that.
That's great. I mean, I look forward to reading that kind of stuff. And, you know, just in terms of the independence and stuff, it's always been some real interesting stories, kind of. Probably one of the most successful, you know, stories is the story of Spawn.
Sure.
And just kind of where that came from. I'm not talking about the movie, but you know, but just I remember, I got back into comics in the 90s boom. You know, I was, you know, really poor and I couldn't buy them. And then back in the, you know, in the 90s boom, I was wrapping up high school and stuff, and I was able to, you know, I had a job. I bought comics again, and I bought Spawn just for the idea of the story. You know, mm-hmm. that here's this guy who dies and has the chance to come back, you know. And I think one of the things that we kind of forgot about, you know, when it comes to the story of Spawn was originally here's this white guy, you know, who's married to his family stuff. He dies and he comes back. Was he was black and he came back white?
I think so.
Yeah, he was black. He came back white. So it was like, man, the devil tricked me, you know? And I'm like, I'm a different guy altogether. And not only that, but every time I use my powers, there's a countdown clock that tells me I'm going to die. And that's actually one of the storylines that I missed the most out of Spawn in general, was that, because I was actually looking forward to there being a last issue one day, you know? Mm-hmm. But just that early on, it was such a simple storyline that's told over and over again by people. You know, somebody makes a deal with the devil, it's not quite what they expected, and now they got to deal with it.
Kid Devil's a perfect example of that. I mean, the fact that recently, I mean, that, you know, very, very recently, before 52, Kid Devil was just a kid. And he was sort of obsessed with being, you know, Blue Devil's sidekick, to the point where he makes a pact with this demon that he is going to get the powers of Blue Devil. However, once he turns, I think it was 18, correct?
I think so.
The demon gets his soul, and that's it. And, I mean, to say the least, he didn't know this going in. He thought he was just going to get some powers, but, well, he kind of screwed himself out of the rest of his life right there.
Yeah, I mean, I love the Kid Devil character. When I first saw, you know, the new Teen Titans, you know, and I saw, like, who was going to be on it, I wasn't so sure about it because I didn't know anything about Kid Devil's past, but I really think that just to the team, he adds a whole different dynamic, I mean, that little piece of story in itself is great, man. It's like, hey, you know what, you can have it. When you turn 18, you're mine, you know, I'm hoping, I haven't read Teen Titans recently, so I don't know what's going on right now. I'm trying to catch it in trade, but I'm hoping that he sticks around and that they get to investigate that character a little more, you know. And it's, you know, not that you want to create a carbon copy of somebody else, but I think, like, Kid Devil reminds me a little bit of Nightcrawler.
Yeah,
you know. Just in terms of, you know, just the youth that he's got with him now, and it's, you know, and just the if he could get over, like, his crush over, I guess, every girl in the Teen Titans, you know, and just kind of start focusing in on that aspect. I loved it. Just the fact that he kept saying that, you know, he'd been just recently talking to Blue Devil, you know, and he never actually did, you know. He hadn't actually been in contact with Blue Devil up until, I think, a recent issue or something, you know.
Yeah. I'm wondering where they're going with that storyline. But, I mean, that's a character with the very concept gives a lot of very clear story directions, a ticking clock, a sense of jeopardy. It's cool. It's great.
Absolutely. And it's been done. And that's the thing. It's like it's a classic story that's been done. Make a deal with a demon. Make a deal with the devil. It doesn't turn out the way you want to and all that. But when it's written right and when the right person's behind it, driving it, man, they knock it out of the park, and it gets me interested. I want to read the next issue.
Well, and by the way, you talk about deals with the devil. How about Ghost Rider?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Ghost Rider has to be brought up. I mean, both the movie version, for once you can actually say this, the movie version and the actual version both, you know, had the same sort of problem going on, where, you know, they make a pact with this devil, and, well, they end up kind of screwed in the end, because, well, whenever the, you know, Demon of Vengeance wants to come on out, there's Ghost Rider right there. And, I mean, this is a guy who literally has a split life going on, because, you know, he can be Johnny Blaze, and then all of a sudden he's Ghost Rider, and, well, Ghost Rider is Ghost Rider. He's not Johnny Blaze. And
right.
There's not much you can really do about that. I mean, he knows what's going on, but the personality is a very demanding personality inside of him.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is I'll be honest. I hadn't actually read with a lot of interest any Ghost Rider stuff until I picked up Vicious Cycle, which was the latest trade that came out.
Yeah.
With, I guess, from the new volume of Ghost Rider and stuff. And Ghost Rider was actually, you know, I'd only read him back in the day when they had Marvel Comics Presents, mm-hmm. And they would have a couple of Ghost Rider stories in there. Mm-hmm. That's when I'd read some of them, and I even think then it was Danny Ketch, right? Or was Johnny Blaze, and then it became Danny Ketch or something. But
they were both active for a while.
Yeah, it was the whole Spirits of Vengeance kind of thing, and I just picked up Vicious Cycle, and I really felt that Vicious Cycle did a really good job of, you know, here's me, I'm new and fresh to the Ghost Rider story, you know, I kind of know what it is, but I've never actually, you know, read a whole comic, much less a whole trade of just his adventures and stuff, and I think it, in a real kind of condensed form, it did a good job of educating me. As to just bring me up to speed up to right now, who is Ghost Rider and what his story is, and then taking it from there, you know. So I'm looking forward to the next volume that's going to come out, you know, and just start reading Ghost Rider through trade, and then now, you know, obviously going back, picking up some essentials and stuff, and really reading through it.
Most of the Ghost Rider stuff I read was the Danny Ketch series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was more of a Danny Ketch guy myself. I actually want to pick up the Essential one of these days, just to get, you know, like some of those old Ghost Rider stories from back in the back when the character was first created, just sort of have a different thing on there. But if I remember correctly, was the first Ghost Rider Johnny Blaze, or was it the previous one that was in the Wild Wild West?
I think it was the Wild West one. It was the Horseman. I think it was just one of those things where. I don't know if he had the same origin. It may have just been one of those Marvel comics that they took the name and took it to something else.
Okay.
That's what I'm thinking.
The 60s and 70s, you know, had that real, you know, biker gang surge, and they said, hey, here, you know, let's create a superhero that'll match this, much in the same way we created the Silver Surfer to match the, you know, the surfing time, you know? Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I realized is, like, I didn't know this, was Ghost Rider originally, he didn't have the whole, like, chain-swinging thing. That was a Danny Ketch thing.
It was, yeah.
And it was that, and then also, like, the penance stare.
Yeah.
So I guess it was Danny Ketch that I had been reading, because that was all stuff that I was like, man, this is cool, because he's on a bike, he swings his chain, you know. And then, you know, now it's been adopted by the Johnny Blaze character as well, all that stuff. But, yeah, I mean, like, the recent run, I just met Mark Teixeira at Free Comic Book Day this past weekend, and I got a really cool Ghost Rider sketch from him. And I didn't get to go see the movie and stuff, because I just figured, you know, that was a DVD kind of rental. Wasn't going to pay my $8 to go see that, you know, although I, you know, spent my $8 on Spider-Man 3, and I'd like my money back. But you know.
All right. It had its moments.
You know, and speaking of religion, it did have, you know, a scene in the church there.
I was going to get to that, actually, yeah, because hey, there's nothing better than sitting down and praying to God to kill somebody for you.
I've been there. I think all my siblings had fallen in line with one of those prayers at one point.
Oh, God. Literally, oh, God. But, God, please kill Peter Parker. Please.
That was probably one of the one moments in the movie. By the way, spoilers, I guess. But one of the one moments in that movie that made me laugh out loud, because I thought, man, that was great.
Yeah.
You know, because I actually like Topher Grace. I mean, he did a great job in that. And that particular scene, was unexpected, and it was a laugh-out-loud moment, and I would have taken 10 of those moments over any dance scene throughout the whole movie.
Hey, I like the dance scenes, but if I were the guy who was doing Spider-Man, okay, I would have had the third movie quite simply as Goblin and Sandman end it with the scene in the church, okay, and then in the fourth movie have Venom.
That's what I was saying. I mean, not to go too far off topic, but that's exactly where I was, where I'm like, they could have had Spider-Man 3 and 4. I think they were just afraid of losing Tobey Maguire.
Exactly.
And Kirsten, they had to throw all the good stuff in.
Yeah, because we didn't get to have Eddie Brock, you know, helping Aunt May with her groceries and, you know, helping Mary Jane with the car and all that. We didn't get that. And that is just such creepy brilliance. I was really hoping to see that on the screen.
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally with you on that. And I really just think that, they kind of blew a chance, but I could they gave me some really good Spider-Man moments in that movie, and they gave me some really good Spider-Man movies before that, so I can't, you know, trash them too much. There's just something about Marvel movies and their third installments that I guess it's contractual; they all have to suck.
Hey, but again, I'll even say I enjoyed X3 to a point, all right?
Yeah, up to a point.
And that would be what, the opening credits? Where?
The only thing I can think of when it comes to Spider-Man 3 is that, how they just announced there's going to be a Spider-Man musical?
Yeah.
And so maybe Spider-Man 3 was just a setup for the musical because they had all the dance numbers.
Yeah. But they're already saying that Spider-Man 4 is going to have the Lizard, so I'm happy.
Yeah, true. Then it's about time for that one too.
Exactly. So. But let's move on back. I want to actually.
Oh, we have a topic.
Yeah, I think so. Last I checked, but I don't know. I want to actually move back to Judaism a little bit. As Marvel Comics, probably the most Jewish character in Marvel Comics, other than the superhero Taylor, is Ben Grimm. And the ever-loving blue-eyed thing.
What a revolting development!
Exactly. Over the years, you know, and that's why I was really happy with the guy, with the portrayal of him in the movie, because they gave him that same sort of Jewish feel, I guess.
Yeah,
Michael Chiklis did that perfectly. But over the years, he's had a very religious quality to him, and he actually reminds me of people that I myself have met in Brooklyn. Living in Brooklyn, I live in a very, very Jewish neighborhood, okay, to the point where almost everybody on my block is a religious Jew except for me. All right, and it gets to the point where I stick out like a sore thumb. Obviously Jewish, but I don't have that yarmulke on my head. And here I am reading Marvel Comics, you know, looking for somebody who I can relate to, who, you know, is Jewish, you know, believes in Judaism and all that. However, is not to the point where he, you know, goes to temple that often or that sort of thing, or, you know, like specifically shows all the time that he's like that. Ben Grimm is the guy I can relate to the most. He's a believer, but he's not exactly practicing. You get that a lot with a lot of characters in the Marvel Universe and in the DC Universe, but Ben Grimm is a very relatable person to me because of that. In fact, he's probably the person I relate to most, period, in comics, is Ben Grimm right there.
I'm a huge Ben Grimm fan. I love him. I really love Dan Slott's run, that eight-issue series. I cherish that trade. I've read that trade recently. I'm probably on my third time reading it because it was such a fun book.
Yeah.
It was so great. And last issue, he gets bar mitzvahed.
Yes.
That was a fun issue.
It was fun. And it was really – the funny thing is, oddly enough, it was touching because it was touching to him. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those things where it was like, you know, it just goes to show you. It's like, man, you know, you could tell that, sure, you know, in the past you get that he wasn't a practicing Jew, but man, this moment actually meant something to him.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
Mm-hmm. Better than any wedding issue, you know, that had ever come out in comics and stuff. That one issue of The Thing is probably one of my favorite comics ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what, actually, because I went through all the stuff to get that bar mitzvah back when I was 13, I mean, I was right there with him. Because, I mean, that could be a giant pain in the ass. You know, I mean, getting in there, learning the prayers, learning how to sort of sing but not really. And, you know, I mean, get up there and get everything right is a very difficult thing to do. And the nervousness that he felt, I was right there with him. You know, the accomplishment he felt, I was right there with him. And it's the sort of thing that you do not get very often in comics.
Right. I love it. I'm flipping through it right now. One of the things I really like is, you know, he goes through the invitation stage, and you see all these people, you know, in the bottom of one of the pages, just receiving their invitations. You know,
yeah.
And you know, it's like, you know, Sue and Reed, you know, and you know, I can't remember his name, the dude from S.H.I.E.L.D. who wears the bolo hat, you know.
Dugan,
you know, Dum Dum Dugan, yeah. You know, he's getting his invitation, and you know, and it's just kind of funny. It's like, and on the very bottom of his bar mitzvah invitation, he writes in handwritten note there, and it says, "Hey guys, don't forget big superhero poker tournament afterwards." You know, you know, most people have a party. He had a poker tournament. You know.
Oh yeah, and that's the thing. You know, that's how he celebrates.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and it was, I mean, I love this. It was one of those things where I really wish that DeVito could have stayed throughout the whole series, at least.
Uh-huh.
It was his intention to come back to that series, but then it got canceled at 8.
Yeah.
One of the things for me, my quarter bin finds are always, I love searching through the thing. I want to get a complete run of the original Thing series.
Oh,
you know?
That's the one back from the 80s, right?
That's some good stuff.
It's some great. I mean, I really love it. It's great because I really think that, I mean, Ben Grimm, I think as a whole, I mean, Peter Parker aside, Ben Grimm, I agree with you, man. I relate so much to him. And he's probably, you know, when it really comes down to it, one of my favorite heroes just for his kind of down-to-earth relatability.
Without a doubt, yeah. John, what do you feel about Ben? I mean, is there anything in particular about him? Or?
He's a great character and stuff. You know, I'd like to get a full collection of the Marvel 2-in-1 stuff he did, too. Certainly, I really enjoyed that last issue of the Thing series by Slott, just because it was so much of a character issue. Again, using the religion as the inroad and stuff like that. And not just, okay, who's the bad guy? Who does he got to go clobber and end of story?
Right.
You know, to me, that was an excellent use of religion. It was a fun issue. And, you know, it built aspects of the character. You know, we get to care about him and learn more about him. And, you know, I love that. I wish that series would go on more.
It would be great to see a return someday.
Yeah.
I'm hoping. I mean, I wrote my handwritten letter to, you know, Marvel a long time ago when I first heard about it, but you know, I don't know, you know, what exactly was the issue with that. You know, I know it probably didn't sell all that well, but
not enough people pulled his thing.
You know, that's right. I remember that. Pull my thing. But see, to me, you know, it's a great, you know, right now with the Fantastic Four movie coming out and stuff, maybe, you know, maybe it's time for a resurgence.
In fact, actually, there was, if I remember correctly, there was a Geoff Johns, Scott Collins, The Thing miniseries.
Yes.
That came out that I absolutely loved. And that was about, I'd say, maybe a year or so before The Thing actually got his series.
Was it the Freak Show one?
The Freak Show, yeah. Freak Show. That was so good. And, again, some of my favorite comics right there, because we got to know more about The Thing, we got to know more about how he himself feels about his everyday life, how, you know, he does feel like that freak show sometimes, with the, you know, obviously with an orange skin, it's hard not to feel that way sometimes, but, you know, how he's learns to accept the fact that he sticks out in the world. And Geoff Johns, I know he's DC exclusive and all that, but I really love to see him play some more in a Marvel universe.
Oh yeah, such a great writer, and I mean, again, like, you know, man, The Thing is such a, you know, he's just such a reachable character. I mean, you could pick him up. I'm hoping that he actually plays a better and bigger role in World War Hulk than he did in Civil War. You know,
oh man,
while I was kind of like right on with him as far as kind of staying out of stuff, I really wanted to see some clobbering time early on. You know,
if World War Hulk doesn't end with a classic Hulk versus Thing, you know, fight or whatever, they've missed a huge opportunity.
Oh, definitely.
Absolutely. I mean, I'll even take a Thing ring, do your thing, you know.
Oh, God.
You know, that actually would be a funny, you know, gimmick to use for like a power-up or whatever, just to, you know, that would be hilarious.
So great.
You know, I used to sit down when I was a kid, and they show it on Boomerang on Cartoon Network. And,
yes.
And, oh, God, that was bad.
That's funny. I think I used to remember I sit down when I was a kid and they'd air it for the first time.
Oh!
Hey, see, and, Brent's not around to be younger than me this time. So.
That's true. That's true.
You're making me feel old.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, Ian, I mean, you're talking about the thing and stuff. What do you think about Kitty Pryde?
Oh, actually, yeah, that's another one right there. When she's done right, and I mean when she's done right, because there's often times where Kitty Pryde is not done right at all, she is a very relatable character as well. The fact that she is another one that grew up also around, you know, the area that I grew up and also grew up in the same sort of background. Her family, again, is the sort of thing where it's a typical Jewish family and all that, and she herself has had moments where she's partaken, you know, certain, you know, Jewish holidays and all that in the comics. And, you know, her Jewish star necklace that she wore for some time, I remember that. You know, she's good, but way too often people get her entirely wrong. They forget that spiritual side of her.
Sometimes she's portrayed very Anglo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and they kind of forget that her Jewish heritage, I think. She's one of the few heroes that when you mention a hero to me and you try and tell me, hey, name off any attributes that they might have. Mm-hmm. She's one of the few that their religion actually pops up in my head right away.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, well, Kitty Pryde, you know, she's this, and she's Jewish, and, you know, along with the thing as well.
Yeah, well, and the fact that her religion played such a heavy part in her original role.
Yeah.
I mean, when she first came to the X-Men, I'm actually happy. I just recently picked up Days of Future Past. Finally going to be able to get to read through that because I've read the initial issue where she first comes in the cab at the very end, but I haven't read much of her early stuff. And that's what I love about Days of Future Past, the fact that they include, along with Days of Future Past, before we even get to Days of Future Past, we have the first four issues of Kitty Pryde, which is a great inclusion in that trade. Actually, I went a little bit nuts after that episode of Heroes that aired, when they went into the future, and it was very Days of Future Past-esque. I actually picked up Days of Future Past, Days of Future Present, and the Excalibur issue, Days of Future Tense.
Oh, nice.
And I got them all, I think all together I spent $28.
Not bad.
So I lucked out on that because, again, Atomic Avenue is my new friend. AtomicAvenue.com is like eBay without the auction. So
really?
It's really good to get back issues of comics and specifically old trades because they have those as well. It was in absolutely perfect condition. Days of Future Tense Days of Future Present has been out of print since like 93.
Wow.
And the one I got was in absolutely mint condition. So I'm very happy about that.
My wife's going to totally hate the fact that you just told me about this website.
That's AtomicAvenue.com.
Cha-ching!
Yeah, but that's definitely good. One question that I want to ask you guys specifically, one of the questions I asked in the post, are there any characters you relate to more due to their religious affiliation? Obviously, I mentioned ones that I did, but what about you guys? I'll start with you, John.
Well, it's funny because, I mean, on the one hand, I would say no, but on the other hand, some of the characters we've been talking about, particularly on the Marvel side of Thing, Nightcrawler, Kitty Pryde, these are some of my favorite Marvel characters. So, you know, I don't think they're that way because of the religious aspect, but, you know, certainly that religious aspect has helped define their characters and give them more depth. And that certainly is an aspect of why I like those characters so much. So I guess that's kind of where I stand on that.
That makes perfect sense to me.
You know, the funny thing is, I mean, one of the things that really, I won't say it's a particular character, but like the Kingdom Come storyline. Mm-hmm. really kind of made me see some of these heroes in a different light, you know, kind of, you know, and I'm looking at, like, Superman, and I'm looking at, you know, Shazam, Captain Marvel, and looking at these guys, sometimes, when written really well, as a, you know, as a good parallel and stuff, but really, it was those guys, like Nightcrawler, Nightcrawler especially, I just found him really likable in X-Men 2. He was probably my favorite thing in there, you know, period. You know, when he was just, you know, praying in the Blackbird before the, you know, before the mission started. What else would you do? You know what I mean? It's like, if you've got strong religious beliefs and you're a superhero, you know, yeah, your knees are going to be, you know, rug burned. You know, it's like, you know, because you're praying so much. And that, and really, you know, just the stuff from the end of the Thing run with Dan Slott was just really touching to me. You know, it's just one of those things that really kind of I didn't expect it came out, you know, of left field in terms of, you know, for me to kind of close the book and go, man, that was touching from a Thing book. But it was definitely those kind of things and those two characters and just kind of how they related, especially in, you know, Nightcrawler's earlier storylines and that kind of stuff, was really cool. And then outside of that, you know, not necessarily, I don't know if you'd call it religious or if you'd call it, you know, mythological religion and stuff, you know, but, you know, characters like Thor and Wonder Woman, who are, you know, really dedicated to their history, their past, you know, as far as their mythology goes. You know, when I see a great amount of dedication, a great amount of just kind of faith just getting played out there, it's encouraging, you know, and it just feels right and it just seems really cool.
No, one of the things that I really like about the Marvel and DC and all that is the fact that they don't just stick with, you know, established religions today. The fact that they go back and they use characters like Thor and Wonder Woman and all that to go with these, I guess you would call them dead religions today, that were big once upon a time, but obviously are not so today. They're not afraid to go there, even if people, you know, do not believe in that sort of thing today. There's still a lot of rich myth to go with.
Yeah,
absolutely, and it just shows some really cool. I mean, when you get creative, there's a wealth of storyline there.
Well, there's a lot of story material. There's also a lot of things you can use for character motivations and beliefs. Mm-hmm. And a good character is one that, you know, has some kind of mindset, and you can think, okay, in this situation, because of that mindset, this character would do this or that or whatever. You know, and religion's a good way to help motivate some of that.
Oh, certainly, yeah. And, I mean, you've got that sort of motivation going on with Wonder Woman. If Wonder Woman was just a character that, you know, somehow got strength and, you know, bullets that could, and, you know, bracelets that could stop bullets, she would not be the same character as, you know, the Amazon warrior that she is. And you'd lose so much of the character if you took away her spirituality and her religion.
Yeah.
Now, are there any weaknesses you find in the way that religion is portrayed? We've touched a lot on the strengths, but are there any particular weaknesses that you find in the way that religion is portrayed in comic books, Wayne?
You know, I mean, for me, the only, you know, weaknesses that I see is just when it's not alluded to or when it's not handled at all, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not one of those, you know, people that thinks that, you know, religion needs to be in everything, because, I mean, I look to my comics for entertainment, you know, and so if you are going to use it in that medium, you know, use it right. You know, use it in a way that that's actually gonna mean something. It's natural. It's a part of somebody's life. And so, really, I mean, like the weakness is for me are when when it's not handled in a natural kind of way and it's just poorly written. Mm-hmm. To me, it's because I can get just as much out of reading any superhero who subscribes to any religion as long as it's well written. Because again, I read it, you know, to escape my normal life. And to be honest, as a pastor, I deal with my spiritual life every day and other people's spiritual life. You know,
sure. Yeah, yeah.
And so it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, the whole reason why I backed out a little bit of doing the Geek Pastor podcast, and I'm doing. Or I want to do more of like the Radio Wayne thing is just because, you know, I'm so wrapped up in my normal everyday life that I'm like to flip on a microphone and to keep talking about my relationship with God and all that. It almost exhausts me, you know, and I never want that to be a chore, you know, so I never want reading comics to be a chore, you know, when reading comics becomes work. You know, I'm done. You know?
Well, you know, once I get my job in the comic industry, I'm going to start a knitting podcast.
That's it. So it's just one of those things where it's like when I take a look at it and stuff, and I mean, the real weakness, I couldn't really point out a specific comic. It's just when I see something and it's just kind of like, ugh, you know, poorly written. And I'll be honest, lately I haven't seen, you know, a lot of that. I've seen a lot of creativity, a lot of, you know, a lot of really neat stuff that I could appreciate. But if you're going to do it, and you're going to write somebody, and it, you know, and if it just so happens that somebody's religion is a well-known portion of their life in the comic story, mm-hmm. You know, you need to work that in. You need to make that a part. Don't retcon it. Don't forget about it. You know, make it a part. If it never was a part, you may not need to add that then, you know?
Definitely. Yeah, and one thing also that I don't want to see, I mean, that I definitely do not want to see, I don't all of a sudden want to see Batman with, like, a crazy Christian as a you know, like a villain or that sort of thing. You know, somebody who... like, if, say, a writer is, you know, detached from religion or, you know, is atheist or that sort of thing and tries to force in some sort of, like, uber-religious character in there as a villain. I mean,
Batman versus the televangelist.
Exactly. You know, I mean, I've seen that a couple times in comics, and it's an issue where I completely avoid it. You know, because, I mean, for the life of me, I know that religion's out there and all that. It ain't all evil. All right, it's not even close to evil. So, to have a character that is like that, it's just kind of ridiculous to me.
No, I agree. It's often used as a writing crutch, and it's not so much religions as you see it as treated as cults or whatever. And it's an easy kind of go-to solution. I need a big bad guy. He needs an army of followers. Oh, it's a religion. You know, that gets kind of old.
Yeah.
You know, I will, and I'll actually take that back. I think, you know, the one thing that I wasn't a big fan of. In a specific storyline, I don't know if you remember, I think it was towards the end of Jeff Johns' run with the Flash, and all of a sudden Vandal Savage.
The two-part with the religious group or whatever.
And it was just one of those things where I was just like, for a Flash story, it didn't really connect with me.
I don't think Jeff Johns wrote those.
That wasn't actually. No.
It wasn't? Well,
yeah, the last two issues of the Flash were not written by Jeff Johns.
Oh, well then, there you go.
But man, it was a, you know, religious congregation. It was just, and it was so poorly handled. It was such a, it was just a bad story, regardless of the religious aspect of it.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I felt like they messed with Vandal Savage and you know, turned him into somebody I didn't remember, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, man, I don't remember Vandal Savage being a, you know, a David Koresh kind of guy, you know, and then you have all these, you know, all the, like, the cult followers and stuff, and I'm just like, you know, maybe in somebody else's story, but not a Flash story.
Plus, it also sounded a little bit too much like one of Jeff Johns' earlier stories involving that one...
Savitar.
Yeah, there you go, Savitar, yeah, where it just, it literally felt like they were trying to do another Savitar, but, well, they did that already.
Right.
You know,
and it was probably written better.
It was.
Oh, much better. And it was, you know, kind of, I don't say the cult of the Speed Force or whatever, but that's kind of sort of what it was.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
The last cult thing that was done right for me was actually the Cult of Connor in 52.
Yeah.
With that was done very well because you could see why it was created because of the loss that occurred with Cassie, not even just because of that, but because they wanted somebody to believe in. You know, this, and they went with Kryptonian religion, which was also really cool to see included there. The fact that they went with the belief that the upside down S symbol, as it were, was a sign of
resurrection,
and all that.
It was good. I just never kind of bought into how do they know all that stuff about the Kryptonian religion, who started it. It was one that it worked for what it did in the story. Had it been a more central aspect,
right?
Because really, after issue, I'm going to say, you know, after the first third of the story, whatever, it kind of, you know, fell away.
Yeah.
If it had been throughout the whole thing, I would have liked to have seen more of a background. How did it get built up? How did they come to these beliefs? Who are the movers and shakers? That kind of stuff.
Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was one of those things that where it kind of falls in line with one of the flaws in 52 was just. How it
there are no flaws in 52.
That's true.
Please let's not get into this until the 52 episode. Oh God, no.
Oh man, it was just one of those things where, like in 52, dealing with a week to week timeline, it just seemed like at that stage of the game, the timing kind of felt weird. How they were able to organize this cult in just a matter of weeks.
Yeah.
You know, Yeah, cults normally kind of rise out of, you know, years. You know, I'll give you maybe months, you know, for comic book timing, but you know, but it was just it rose in a quick amount of time. Obviously, we found out later that was, you know, the work of Faust. But one of the things that I picked up on it, though, was the cult of Connor. First off, I didn't understand how they knew to call it the cult of Connor.
There is that.
Because it was a, you know, secret identity. But the thing on top of that was, and I think it was mentioned in issue 52, I think. I don't know. But it was all of a sudden the followers of that it became the Church of Connor instead of the cult of Connor.
Or the Church of Connell.
The Church of Connell.
I'd have to double check.
To reflect the more of like the positive side, not so much seeking after resurrection and all that kind of stuff. And where I really liked it was just it was the interaction within that cult where you had Ralph Dibny and Green Arrow and Green Lantern. You know, all the guys basically who'd come back from the dead.
Yeah, it's the whole, is resurrection possible? You guys have all done it. Tell me about it. I mean, that was fun. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, well, I mean, and it kind of made sense because 87 people have come back from the dead. So,
yeah.
I mean, well, you know, why can't one more?
Right.
Too bad they didn't have Hawkman there because he's got the most experience.
Yeah.
But again, you can't say anything bad about Hawkman or Sean will hit you with the mace.
It sounds painful.
These days, I think I'll take my chance with Sean. Seems to be the easier path.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Wow.
Hey, did any of you guys read Monolith by Palmiotti and Gray?
No, actually, I did not.
Yeah, no, I never picked that up.
At some point, I may go pick that up. I've heard good things about it, and they did good stuff with the character in Battle for Bloodhaven.
Yes, they did. And the reason why they used him in Battle for Bloodhaven, obviously, is because it was their character. And
yeah.
The series ended before they wanted to. I know that. They had a lot more planned for the character, but obviously...
It only lasted, 10 issues?
I think it was actually 12, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
But,
about a year, though, yeah.
Yeah, about a year. And, I mean, it was great for when it was there. And it's another one that went with the Hebrew myth, which is another reason why I really dug it. But I've seen monoliths used in comics and in cartoons before, and it never really seemed quite right. If I remember correctly, Batman did it, correct? The animated series?
I believe they had a Gollum or whatever in there once.
Yeah, that one was halfway decent, but I feel that Monolith actually managed to get the myth as close as it should be because of the way that they created the character and the fact that he was created from... if I remember correctly, the full plot of Monolith was that this was a character that was created to protect the streets of Brooklyn, actually, from a mob. And he was actually the fallen, I believe, boyfriend of the current character's grandmother. And
yeah.
Eventually they found him. And, you know, he becomes the protector of the current character, as it were. And the current character is a recovering drug addict. And the only reason why she is even allowed to find the monolith in the first place is because her grandmother will only give her the house that she had, you know, if... she immediately detoxes and never touches drugs again.
Mm.
That was the main thing. And I found that very interesting because you had two sort of faith things going on there. You had the Hebrew aspect, and then you had the faith thing going with the fact that, you know, she believed that, you know, that she could be a good person. And another great book out there that I felt was able to capture both religion and faith almost perfectly. So,
has that been traded?
I believe it has been. If not, it's going to be a very easy find in either a dollar bin or a quarter bin. Because, again, not that many people picked it up. It wasn't, you know, one of the most popular things, but it was definitely an under-the-radar title that you should definitely search out if you can. So, at San Diego, I'm thinking I might actually try and... there might be, I think, one issue of that I was missing. I might try and track down, but...
are you planning on going to San Diego?
I am
going to
be at San Diego, yes.
Cool, I'll see you there.
Definitely, no problem. Yeah. And, yeah, because actually my girlfriend just got on the list for... they just added new hotels, and I believe she just got on the list for hopefully a cheaper hotel than the one that we have. goes, oh, cool. We have one already now, which is going to cost an arm and a leg, but it's like right near the convention center. But we're going to get one that's a little farther away that will cost a hell of a lot less.
So. Only one arm and a leg for a hotel in San Diego. Not bad.
Steal.
Actually, on second thought, we're going to be paraplegic. Yeah. It's that bad, literally. It's the arms, it's the legs, possibly even a thigh muscle from there. I mean, it's bad.
You'll be disembodied souls for the next four lives.
Oh, God.
Wow.
Yeah. But actually, let's talk a little bit about the Spectre. Because we talk about the Spirit of Vengeance in Marvel, let's talk about the Spirit of Vengeance in DC. Now, I know that the Spirit of Vengeance is something that's been around in a lot of different religions, if I remember correctly. Is this anywhere near any sort of myth that I'm missing here, or was the Spirit of Vengeance just sort of created in DC?
I believe that it's something that kind of DC created in terms of the superhero goes, you know?
Yeah.
You know, outside of Christianity and stuff, a lot of mythology and a lot of stories, you know, talk of spirits of vengeance and that kind of stuff, especially when dealing with somebody who, you know, was wrongly killed, you know, murdered and that kind of stuff. And I really think that that's kind of that, you know, that's where it came from, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that it was just one of those things where I don't know who came first, Ghost Rider or the Spectre, or who carried that moniker.
Spectre goes back 40s.
Okay.
So
you know,
he came along first.
And was he known as the Spirit of Vengeance back then and stuff, or was he?
That maybe not. I don't know.
That's the only thing I don't know. I don't know if, you know, if it was, you know, just one company thought it was a cool sounding thing and they just decided to call their other character that too, you know, but you know, but it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, it's good to have one around, you know?
Sure. Yeah, for anybody who messes up, you got to deal with the Spirit of Vengeance.
Right. And he's not the only one. I mean, the thing is I mean, the Spectre, you know, being one of them, but and probably, you know, the most known, but I just got done reading Shadow Pact.
Yeah.
And talking about Ragman. And the Ragman's just, you know, really interesting, you know, in terms of actually giving the people that he absorbs the chance for redemption by helping him, you know, by giving up their strength or by giving up, you know, in certain cases, like their sight and like that kind of stuff. And they get to a certain point where they earn their redemption. And then once they do that, they can leave the Ragman, you know, they can leave his rags, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Which works greatly because, I mean, not only is he in essence sort of, I guess he's sort of the Spirit of Vengeance light, as it were.
Yeah.
But the good thing about him is that you actually get redemption. There is no redemption
exactly.
In Spectre.
Yeah.
I mean, Spectre gets you and, well, you're gone.
Right.
You know?
Right.
At least here you can prove that perhaps you could be a pure soul again.
Right. And I mean, personally, I never really got the Spectre, especially, you know, like when, you know, when Hal Jordan became the new host and all that kind of stuff. I'm interested to see where they go with him now.
Yeah.
Because that was one of the things where I really liked Shadow Pact, the first volume trade. I really liked reading it. But I wasn't a big fan of the miniseries that led up to Infinite Crisis.
Yeah.
That was probably my least favorite miniseries.
That would be Day of Vengeance, correct?
Day of Vengeance.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know. And I just kind of – maybe. And it, for me, it was pretty, because I'm not all that familiar with the Spectre, that I didn't realize that without a host that he would just go nuts. And I don't know if that was just out of convenience or if that's happened before.
That's out of convenience, actually, because he's been without a host before. And actually, if I remember correctly, before Hal Jordan was with the Spectre, he was without a host for a while. And the problem is here, he was swayed. That's the main thing here. With Infinite Crisis, I think it proved that the Spectre went without a host can be easily swayed to the improper side. The human is an anchor that allows him to sort of see right and wrong a little easier. So that's the difference there, I guess.
Right.
I guess. Literally, I'm sort of pulling this out of my ass here, hoping that I'm right, because if I'm not, then, well, that's the way it goes. But it's the only explanation that I can really think of.
Good.
And one other character I wanted to mention before we actually get onto the forum comments is Dust. Are you guys familiar with Dust from X-Men?
X-Men. That's the one in the full burka, Trinson. Yeah.
Yeah. one of the few Sunni Muslim characters in Marvel Comics. Now, Dust, there was going to be a storyline with her, and I don't know if you guys have heard of this, but do you remember the Guthrie with wings?
Jay Guthrie.
Yeah. Now, before they decided to kill him, and again, this is a major spoiler here, but whatever, it's an old storyline already, but if anybody wants to read that, well, he's dead. the original storyline they were going to have with him was that he was going to start a relationship with Dust and eventually convert to Muslim in order for them to be together. Now, they decided not to go with that, and they decided to, you know, eventually kill off the character of Jay. I would have very much have liked to see this go down, though, because it's not very often where you get to see in comics, whether it be Marvel, DC, or even indie, a character converting for love.
That would have been an interesting storyline.
It definitely would have been. I mean, do any of you guys even remember anything from what you've read of any characters converting?
Not anybody major.
Religion is so rarely used to any huge degree other than a lot of the characters we've talked about, much less in a converting from one to the other.
Sure, yeah.
Right. I mean, unless you, like, you know, count somebody converting from, like, I guess it's more of like a race thing, you know, like Atlantean to, you know, to like a human kind of, you know, thing. But I don't think of anybody off the top of my head really pursuing that in terms of storyline, you know?
Yeah. Well, then they missed a major opportunity here because...
I mean,
to me, in general, Dust was a very interesting character. She was actually first brought in by Grant Morrison during his New X-Men run. And, I mean, since then, in New X-Men Mutant Academy and now just New X-Men, I mean, she has been the type of character that I wanted to learn more about her. And her and Jay did a little bit of flirtation before the new writers came on, and eventually Jay ended up, well, dead. And it kind of makes me think that this literally was the new writers thinking, well, we don't really need this character, let's get rid of him. You know, with the whole House of M thing with No More Mutants and all that, there were a lot less options to do things with mutants. However, Jay Guthrie was still there. They didn't need to kill him off. They could have went with the storyline, but instead they decided to go with the whole, you know, I think it was actually, again, a religious thing with,
Stryker.
Stryker again, the same guy from, you know, X-Men 2 and Claremont's original storyline coming back.
Like God Loves, Man Kills.
Yeah, God Loves, Man Kills, coming back and deciding that, well, obviously the House of M event was a sign that mutants are the devil, let's get rid of the rest of them.
Right.
And that's how Jay eventually ends up dying. But they could have so easily used somebody else with that, just so we'd be able to get this interesting storyline that obviously we'll never get now.
I think part of the problem with Jay and more why he had to die was another guy with wings, mm-hmm. they're going to move him into the X-Men mansion, too much like Angel, you know. It was a lack of uniqueness that killed him.
But where's Angel
right
now?
Which is stupid. Like, I'm going to know this off the top of my head. Exactly. He's showing up in some of the World War Hulk stuff. Seems to be a quasi... Champions reunion, it seems like.
Oh, okay. But it might not even be the Champions. That's what I love about that. There's apparently a dispute going on around the name.
Yeah.
So.
It's not going to be in the Champions, but him and Herc seem to be being gathered to actually possibly side with the Hulk from what I'm seeing in the solicitation.
Really? Huh. That should be interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, Angel...
They touched on some of that in the prologue, maybe.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to have to pick up the prologue. I've been trying to avoid World War Hulk because I feel it's ridiculous that they're having another event already. But I guess maybe I'll pick it up. I don't know.
There is no avoiding the Hulk.
Yes, he comes into you like a mountain.
He will find you.
It'll be a short war. It'll be, you know, a four-issue all coming out. Wait, wrong series.
No, that's World War III, and again, that's for the next episode you're on, John, all right? You're getting ahead of yourself.
If Doc Samson changes Bruce's magic word and he can't become the Hulk again at the end of this, I'm going to be very upset.
Okay, let's move on to the forum.
Sorry.
I will tell you this, you know, I will not read, you know, World War Hulk until I see an exit strategy.
Mission accomplished. I mean,
Hey, look. World War Hulk was over 2 years ago.
That's right. I would love a scene where Tony Stark comes out and says, mission accomplished, and then gets his butt handed to him by the Hulk afterwards.
Well, that's exactly what happened to him. I mean, come on, that's exactly what happened to him in Civil War, you know?
Yeah, true.
Yeah, mission accomplished. Yeah. Oops. And by the way, if you're reading, if you haven't been reading Nova, we're going to cover this on 22 pages. The next thing, that next episode of Comic Time, we're going to do Nova number one. It's our 22 pages. Pick up Nova number one, and then pick up number two, because number two is
comes after number one.
It does. It comes after number one.
Good, because I was getting confused. This whole linear time.
Yeah, unless you're reading Countdown, all right? Because then,
oh yeah,
then two becomes before number one.
I thought that was just massive shipping delays.
But okay, now we're just getting silly. But yeah, yes. Definitely read Nova number two, because there's a wonderful scene where Nova comes down on Earth and he's like, "What the hell happened to the New Warriors?" And you get this look on everybody's face, like, "Oh, you didn't hear?"
I thought they set up in Annihilation that he knew that everyone was fighting, and kind of why
he knew bits and pieces.
Ah.
However, he did not know anything about anybody exploding.
Yeah. I would see that being relevant information.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit convenient storytelling, because I thought that he had a full knowledge, too.
Well, it was the fact that he was – again, this is just according to his book, but and right. we'll get into this further next episode. But just the fact that apparently he only heard the bits and pieces that there was a war going on between the heroes, and he didn't know why it was started or that anything happened to the New Warriors. So, yeah, there you go with that. But let's go into the forum comments here, as there were some interesting comments here. Let's start off with Lobo. His was nice and short. I believe the U.S. Constitution mandates a separation of church and comics. Seriously, I think it was handled well in Ostrander and Mandrake's The Spectre, but I believe Ostrander has the advantage of being both a former seminary student and an excellent writer.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know about that with Ostrander. Did you, John?
I didn't really follow too much of the Ostrander Spectre series. I just didn't care for it. Mm-hmm. Not that it was bad, and I'm certainly not going to say that. Yeah. I just – there was an era of the Spectre, and I think the Ostrander Mandrake series is part of this, where he would deal by people by, gory, turn them into wax, melt them, rip them limb from limb, dice them to pieces type stuff. It's like, I really don't need to read that in my comics.
Get killed by the phantom corpse of your wife, that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. It was the ironic vengeance kind of a thing, which, it's cool and whatnot, just not for me.
And plus, it's so hard to determine what's a coincidence and what's ironic anyway, so.
Yeah.
With that, I would probably avoid a comic that was heavy-handedly preaching to me, and we pretty much agree with that statement from what we've been saying here, so I agree with that, Lobo. And the separation of church and comics when it comes to the U.S., I believe there's going to be a bill passed attached to a sprinkler bill, so that'll be coming soon.
I thought it was more of like a spit take bill.
It's possible, yes, but...
I thought somebody had sworn to veto it either way.
No, that was World War III. All right.
Oh, damn, I'm just...
Wait, let's go on here to Matthew Guy, all right, our favorite poster. Here we go. What is your take on how religion is portrayed in comics? Depends on who is doing a good job or not. The For Tomorrow storyline with Daniel as the priest and Superman was very good writing, as Wayne would agree. The Crisis of Faith Superman gets every 5 years or so gets old, but
I would
guess...
agree too.
Yeah.
But I guess if you have the Man of Steel taking Paxil, Zoloft, or some other drug that can just relax him, that would be good.
Wow. Superman on meds.
Wow. And I'm thinking to myself, Warren Ellis needs to write this story.
Yes.
I'm sure he probably has in his
head. I'm sure it'll show up in All-Star Superman eventually.
Yes, Grant Morrison talking about Superman on Paxil and losing his virility because of it. May he needs a very small slice of red kryptonite and on a limited basis to take the edge off being a superhero all the time. Who knows? Is there a character you relate to more due to his or her religious affiliation? I do not know of any heroes that believe in the Methodist faith. Daredevil's Superman, there you go. Daredevil's faith is Catholic, but serves the story and character very well, better than Superman. Warrior by day and superhero by night, talk about split personalities. It does have a point there. I mean, come on. You're the guy who's, like, going with the law and all that to try and get people arrested. and then there's you hitting a guy and tying him to a pole.
Same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Well, just more direct. I mean, no.
Exactly. What strengths and weaknesses do you find in the portrayal of religion and religious characters, as long as they do not take my faith out of context to an extreme? Oh, yeah, it does not bother me, as we touched on in this as well, Draco. As a certified lay speaker of the United Methodist Church for 7 years and preached in the pulpit dozen of times, I know when religion in comics goes too far, at least for my preference anyway. But for the most part, I do not want religion in my comics unless it brings a positive message or shapes a character in a positive manner. The crisis of faith, excluding Superman and Daredevil, I fear it is a bit too much for any other DC or Marvel character to handle unless a great writer knows what he or she is doing and future writers can build from it later on that matches closely the character they are focusing on. And that is Matthew Guy. Lay speakers fill in for pastors within a certain area, say 2 or 3 counties, so pastors can go on vacation, deal with family emergencies, go to church conferences while maintaining a message in the pulpit for church members instead of praise and worship service. So that's a little more about what lay speakers are. And, well, that is kind of true about what he's saying right there. The crisis of faith thing only really works if you're going to be able to use it in the future. You know, as opposed to just coming out of left field and it just disappears. I want to see this continue or not. Simple as that.
Well, yeah, it's got to be something they build up. You can't go to that well too many times with the same character. It can easily be a writing crutch.
That's the thing. I mean, if it's going to be used in the story, then cool. I mean, if there's going to be some kind of redemption or a lead into something else, you know, then that's awesome. You know, but yeah, it does. It gets old. You know, if you know, that's one of the things where I really felt like For Tomorrow, that's what I was looking for. Where I thought that some of the writing was really good, but that's just what I was looking for. Was I didn't get the payoff that I wanted.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, and call me cheesy, but it's like I just wanted that kind of, you know, you're right, I'm Superman, you know, kind of, you know, kind of thing. And because I feel like that's what it's either going to go in that direction with Superman is what I would expect, you know.
Yeah.
Or you go with like Daredevil, where you just get darker and darker, you know. Just one way or the other, there needs to be some kind of payoff.
I thought I was just going to a costume party, and that's why I was wearing these tights. But no, I'm Superman.
Holy cow.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, it just seems like, you know, Matthew's right, that, you know, this whole crisis of faith, we go through it every so often with certain characters. Again, Daredevil, Superman are good examples. On the flip side, the other thing they tend to go back to from time to time is starting up a religion centering around Superman or whatever. Sometimes right. We get some brilliant stories like the one we saw recently in Action Comics with the lady praying to Superman. Other times we get the fairly abysmal Church of Superman from Action Comics Weekly. And a lot of it just comes down to, is it well executed? And, you know, just how many times have we seen this idea before?
Yeah.
And the honesty is, you know, isn't that how we feel about any kind of storyline, you know?
Oh, yeah, totally.
It's exactly like that, and it's like, man, I just want my comics well-written, and I want to roll my eyes as little as possible.
Oh, yeah.
Now, one question I have for you, Wayne, going back to your earlier comments on how you thought, you know, the afterlife and all that should be treated kind of consistently in DC and Marvel, you know, within each company and stuff. Are you a fan of continuity in general? Or is that something specific to the religious aspect? You know, is this something that for all stories you feel this way or not? I'm just curious.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I don't know if I would call it continuity. I am a fan of consistency.
Okay, you know? Consistency is fair. That's fine.
I'm definitely a fan of consistency. And so it's kind of just like, when it comes to that, you know, the afterlife per se, I recognize there's going to be some ways, you know, where, hey, this is going to really help us out in this story. But it would just be really cool if they could figure, you know, certain things out. It's kind of like, you know, there's a lot of hellish characters out there, you know. It just, you know, there are a lot of kind of demon characters, sons of Satan or Satan himself, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And you know, it'd be great to just kind of figure out, okay, well, you know, who is Satan in the DCU? You know, who are...
How is hell structured, etc.?
How is that structured? Yeah. How is, you know, heaven or paradise or eternity or whatever structured, if there is that? You know what I mean? Because it's one of those things where, you know, it could get a little tricky, because if you're saying, like in Marvel or something, if Marvel goes... Well, here's what heaven looks like, but what about the other people that are represented there that don't believe in that, or the other, you know what I mean? It's like, what if, you know, then you start falling into all this like little minutia when it comes to all these different religions and denominations and all that kind of stuff. I'm just saying, you know, in the afterlife, are there clouds or not? You know, or is it brimstone or what? Or is there just like a general comic purgatory? Where everybody
kind of a similar enough frame of reference visually that you could say, oh, I know where we are.
Yeah, because I think it'll help them out, because then they can really figure out, well, how does death really work for us? Because if there is no heaven and hell in the DC universe, per se, if there's just one big room where everybody goes, well, then it should be easy, you know, that you open up that door, you grab the first hero you see, and boom, they're resurrected, you know?
Yeah.
But just, you know, I think that if they were to figure out exactly, man, how does life and death kind of work in the DCU or the Marvel U, then we'll, you know, we'll be able to figure out, well, how does this stuff actually, pertain to these guys? But I'm all for, you know, taking the creative license, because the story's going to be good.
And also, I mean, things get so much more complicated when you go in with things like, say, for example, what they've been doing recently with Shadow Pact. There are like different demon classes that you could be. Like apparently,
right,
to be a higher up demon class is to be a lower class as opposed to a higher class. And things get so complicated when you're actually trying to go into that it can be really hard to actually follow.
Exactly. And I'm not looking for complication. I'm just looking for consistency that things kind of...
So that once you learn the rules, you can follow along, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I think, you know, it'd be cool. Because, I mean, if you think about it, it's like, you know, Green Arrow came back to life in a totally different way than Jason Todd did.
Yeah.
You know? And Hal Jordan came back to life in a completely different way than all those guys come, you know?
Yeah.
Who knows how Captain America is going to come back if he's actually dead, you know? But it's just one of those things that it's like you have all these different ways that everything kind of came about that I'm like, man, like one of the biggest things is, you know, you mentioned it, John, is like, man, is Barry Allen, is he dead? Is he in heaven? Is he in the Speed Force? Is he in everything?
Is he in Countdown? I mean, we don't know, you know? I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. But, and also, if you remember correctly, if I remember correctly, that is, Hal Jordan, when he first got into the Spectre's body, didn't they find his soul in Purgatory?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Purgatory is established in the DC, or is it? You know, because, I mean, some people say it is, some people say it isn't, but...
They've kind of, sort of, as much as they have established anything, because let's face it, they waffle on everything.
Yeah.
They've established Purgatory, they've established Heaven, they've established Hell, they've established, you know...
Limbo and stuff like that.
Limbo, Olympus, you know, the Phantom Zone, etc. So, yeah.
You know, the best thing about the whole thing is, you know, I love what Keith Giffen said, is that he can bring Blue Beetle back to life in a single sentence. Blue Beetle walks into the room.
Yeah.
You know, I have the complete opposite stand on that.
Right.
He says, yeah, Blue Beetle walks into the room and says, hi, guys. Yeah,
right.
Do it that way, but I think that's really cheap writing.
Well,
oh yeah, I mean, it totally cheats us out of a story.
Yeah,
well, I love Ted Kord more than the next guy, but I will be honest and tell you that I think I started liking him a lot more when he died.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
I
really liked him. I really liked him in Blue Beetle. I was really, really hoping that you know, maybe instead of Superman, Batman, that we would have gotten a Blue and Gold book.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, totally, totally. I would have loved to have seen that.
Yeah, but the thing was, I really kind of realized, just like with all these other people who kind of get up in arms over people who died. You know, I really liked Blue Beetle before. I thought he was funny. I thought he was a great character. But I think I like him more now that he's dead.
Well, and to be honest, as much as I would be kind of outraged, upset, disappointed, or whatever, if they did a, you know, I open a comic, he says, hi, I'm back, and they move on, I'd be totally upset with that story. I'd still be happy he's back.
Sure.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. With the caveat of, okay, they've cheapened death, yes, yet again.
Yeah.
You know, it's a complex thing.
Right. Well, and the funny thing is that coming from Blue Beetle, and if it was written by Keith Giffen, I would probably laugh about it and accept it.
Of course. Of course.
You know?
It's Keith Giffen. It's his character, basically.
Yeah. He could play that off as a running gag for, you know, the next, you know, formerly known as the Justice League miniseries, if they ever do one, you know.
Kind of, yeah.
Definitely. Oh, you know. Are you guys reading Birds of Prey currently?
Yes.
I'm catching it in trade.
Okay. All right. Then, you know what? I don't want to spoil anything, but let's just say that a character from Giffen's run is not nearly as dead as you think she is.
Mm. Oh, cool.
Okay. When they brought her back, we haven't found out exactly why she's back. But that's another thing about, you know, how do these characters come back? Because I'm sure she came back in an entirely different way than Hal or Ollie or anybody like that actually came back. So
or Hawkman or, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. But again, I'm not going to spoil it, but you'll be pleasantly surprised, to say the least, once that comes around.
Just as long as they don't bring back Bucky, I'm okay.
Yeah, about that.
I want to see an intercompany crossover with Red Hood and Winter Soldier.
Yeah,
that would be awesome.
And with Captain America, yeah.
Till death do we part.
hey, well, look, I am convinced without a shadow of a doubt that if they do not put Bucky in that damn Cap uniform, I'm going to be so annoyed. At this point,
that's an interesting thing.
At this point, you have to.
I don't know.
But I wouldn't be surprised if they don't because, well, Iron Man is a douche.
I really don't know where they're going with that because I thought the whole thing was out of the blue.
Yes, and
I think that's the new miniseries that's coming out.
Timing, just to let you know, Iron Man is a douche. That's totally ours. So
yeah, that's the title of the new miniseries.
Iron Man is a douche.
Yeah,
yeah. Let's have
52 weekly issues. It'll go on for a while. There's a lot to be said.
I'm just waiting for the reign of Captain America.
Yeah. Oh man, and by the way, I'm still drooling about that movie armor.
Oh, the Iron Man movie armor?
Yeah. Oh, ooh, the armor. Ooh, that look good. That look good.
I don't even think I've seen the images.
It looks exactly like it should.
Cool. Yeah. It's good to hear.
That's a really good way to put it.
Yeah. Well, literally, I mean, the fact is it looks a lot like the current armor, however, circular chest piece.
Cool.
So it has like the old feel of like the old-fashioned armor. So
the classic, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And by the way, we got a comment here from Titans Together that I want to just quickly put in here. It was in response to Lobo's comment about the separation of church and comics. Technically, you are correct. Although the Constitution doesn't really state anywhere a separation of church and state, it is in the bylaws. The term is usually giving credit to Thomas Jefferson as he pushed the concept into our Constitution. So there we go with that. For the literal term, it's not technically in there, but technically it is.
Well, thank you for clarifying that. I feel much more confused.
Why, you're quite welcome. The troops will be home soon.
I thought they were home already.
Yeah, about that. Cap's dead. All right, here's Smog with his comment. I love reading comics that make me think and consider new possibilities and ideas. Religion is a topic that can be approached in different ways, use different interpretations. I have no problem with religion being used in comics as long as it's not a preach fest. Not like I'm reading a sermon out of a Sunday mass. There are certain books that I like how they've mixed in God and dogma, like Preacher, Lucifer, and Midnight Nation, and that's Smog. And, well, I'm glad he mentioned Preacher, because, well, you can't get more in the realm of religion than Preacher. And that's certainly a different take on it, to say the least. You guys,
yes.
you guys fans of Preacher?
No, haven't read it.
Not really?
Yeah, it's one of those series that I've always wanted to, you know, pick up and read and stuff and really kind of... I just never really found... The time to invest in it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the character in general is one that I've always wanted to really get into, and other people I know, like, absolutely rave about it. I've read, like, one or two issues that I've really enjoyed, so I want to eventually pick it up and trade. But actually, well, John Constantine is a very religious type of character as well. That another guy that I need to actually pick up more of, because, well, Hellblazer is fantastic. And so many different people have put their own touch on him, and yet the book is still good to this day. So that's certainly a testament for character.
Yeah, well, and I've heard great things both about Hellblazer and Preacher, so I'm sure you'll enjoy it when you read them.
Yeah, well, and again, I got to get to them eventually. But
if only the Constantine movie was better.
Yeah, well, Whoa. That's what happens when you actually put Keanu Reeves in something, so...
Whoa.
I'm like a preacher Hellblazer dude. That's awesome. Why didn't they name my movie Hellblazer? Oh, because it has hell in it. damn. Yes, because you can't possibly put hell in a title and have it be rated PG or PG-13, so.
No, you already blow. Like, that's one word you already get. Like, you've lost it.
Shit.
You can't, you know, you can't use it now.
Well, shit, fuck. That's all I have to say.
You know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of, what movie was that? The, Idiocracy.
Oh, I just watched that last week.
And it was just, like, right there, like, you know, just number one movie, you know, ass right there.
We now return to Ouch My Balls. Which is sort of the natural progression of My Name is Earl.
Yeah.
I like My Name is Earl, but literally, when I saw the opening to that, it looked so much like My Name is Earl, and then all of a sudden it gets hit in the balls, and I'm like, wow, this is what our society is going to be someday.
Great episode tonight, by the way.
I'm actually three behind, so I didn't get a chance to watch it yet, but I'm sure it was awesome.
Yeah, tonight was the season finale, so.
Okay, good, yeah. Oh, but actually, one more thing I got to say about Idiocracy, my favorite line in the entire thing, welcome to Costco, I love you. Welcome to Costco, I love you. That's where we're going to get. We're going to get to a word where I love you replaces welcome.
You know, I'm looking forward to retirement so I could be a greeter just so I could say that now.
Welcome to Walmart. I love you. Welcome to Walmart. Will you be my friend?
That's where I draw the line.
Yeah. All right. Any final comments on religion before we wrap this baby up?
No, not really.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. Religion is awesome. There we go.
It's a good thing, and comics are a good thing. They're great, and that's just it. You know, it's like I like my comics well written. I like them consistent. You know, keep it up. Would I ever be, you know, interested in a particular superhero kind of going through like a spiritual journey of some sort? Man, absolutely, as long as it's well-written and it fits,
sure.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
You know, it's like what John said. It's like, you know, he doesn't want Batman fighting against some kind of televangelist and stuff, but, you know, and at the same time, it's like, I can't see, you know, really just certain heroes going through, you know, certain religious aspects and making it seem like it's a natural fit. I don't think I'll ever, you know, be able to read an entire comic where Dick Grayson is preaching from a pulpit or something, you know. Although that might be kind of cool, you know, he's undercover or something, you know. But that's where it would be.
I was gonna say, last time we saw him in a religious storyline, it was the Brother Blood stuff that was really, you know, train wreck in progress.
Yeah,
too bad.
I'm never a real big fan of a lot of the Brother Blood stuff, but that's the thing. And I mean, and I would just say, I mean, like, and that just goes right back to it. Just if it's well written, if it feels natural and it's cool, I mean, like that's where I'm at. And being the kind of Christian that, you know, again, I've always wanted to be and stuff, is that, you know, my mind is very just open to seeing truth in anything. And so if there's a comic out there that makes me love God more, then cool. You know, I want to be able to, you know, if there's stuff that makes me think, that challenges my faith, then awesome. I don't want to be one of those kind of guys that shies away from something just because it's, you know, it might be threatening to me.
Sure.
I want to read stuff that's going to challenge my life and it's going to grow. And if comics can help me do that and really, really entertain me, which is the number one reason why I read it, all the better.
Like I said, you got to read Fallen Angel. Enough said.
I'm all about it.
Yeah. But one thing that I wanted to touch on before we wrap up, Spider-Man right now is going through his own sort of crisis of faith. I mean, specifically with what happened, you know, post-Civil War and all that in his life. I mean, you could sort of see the spiritual journey as a difference between Spider-Man in the red and blues and Spider-Man in the black.
Yeah.
When he's wearing the red and blues, he's a guy who's in a good place in his life. He, you know, he's happy to be where he is.
He's the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Exactly. He's a very, he's a guy who seems like he's in the right place spiritually and faith. When he's in the black costume, you know that he's in a completely different place, where he's out to prove something. He's out to get revenge on something, and he's trying to perhaps piece his life together in whatever way possible. But that's literally the difference between light and dark that you get,
yeah,
both in religion and comics and spirituality in comics, that will happen to absolutely any character.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and it kind of bums me out because I'm a real big fan of like the black costume, and I, you know, I don't necessarily need angry Spidey when he's in the black costume, but you know, that's just me. But you know, but it's just it's one of those things, and I'm really curious to see how this Spider-Man storyline pans out, because I'm almost in the camp of, you know, how much more can this guy go through?
Yeah,
but literally not just. Not treating him like as a real person, but I'm just like, how much more can this character go through before everything's been done?
Sure.
Everything's been done.
Yeah, I mean, how many people have to die or get shot for him to realize that great power comes great responsibility, you know, all that kind of stuff, where he just tosses, you know, the mask off again and he says, Spider-Man, no more. All that kind of stuff. It's like, man, how much more has got to happen before some kind of shift in the space-time continuum needs to happen so that we get maybe Ultimate Spider-Man, you know?
Radioactive spider splooge. Enough said. All right. Spider-Man the Rain. All right. It's Spider-Man the Rain. Spoilers. In Spider-Man the Rain, he killed Mary Jane with his spider splooge.
It's true.
It's disturbing.
Gross.
We're getting there. It seems like, you know. I mean, there's got to be a point where enough is enough.
Yeah.
So, there you go. I think that kills everything just even by bringing that up.
Yeah.
it's a great series. It's an absolutely great series, but that was the most disturbing thing I've ever read in a comic.
Oh, yeah. What were we saying about editing before?
Editing is just awesome. editing's great. Yeah. No problems there, but yeah. Anything you want to say, John, before we wrap it up?
No, not really. I think we covered a lot of it. It was a good discussion.
Yes, indeed, and I'm glad that both of you were part of it, because, well, specifically, it's good to have you back on the show, Wayne, because, like I said, it's been a while, and talking to you is always fun, so.
It's great, and anything I can do to let the people out there, you know, in the world of the internet know that I'm still alive, great. You know.
Yes, will we be seeing any more Radio Wayne anytime soon? Or?
Yeah, I've conceded the fact that I don't know if you heard the episode where I was basically mobile. I went to MegaCon and I used my portable recorder.
Yeah.
I just determined that's the easiest way right now for me to record
and to
get on. And so expect to hear more on the road kind of stuff.
Okay.
I'll be heading to New York later on next month on vacation, so I'll be kind of taking some time out to record a little bit about like my New York comic book store experiences, and then I'll be heading to Chicago later on in June also, so I'll be doing some more of that as well. And if I could just keep, you know, getting, you know, my church to send me places, then I'll have more podcasts.
Hey, well, cool. well like I said, man, I mean, when you're in New York and if you want to hang out at all, hit me up, man, definitely.
Let's do it.
Hell yeah. No problem, because like I said, New York and comic book places, we are aplenty.
Amen.
Hee hee. And John, how many different places are we going to find you in the next month?
Let's see. Just did the segment on Comic Geek Speak for the March 2007 comic book numbers. Going to be releasing an episode of my own comic book page podcast soon, hopefully. Not already, on the trade sales for March 2007 that I recorded with Chris Marshall, the Collected Comics Library. We're going to be talking later on 52. That's pretty much it that I know of or can remember.
Now, that 52 conversation, that's going to be on my show, right? Yeah, I think so.
Sure.
I'm not sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, whatever.
No, we'll figure it out.
David D. and John Mayo for the possibly 52-hour podcast of the second half of 52 and Countdown Number 1.
Oh, God.
I'm all for that.
Yeah, you ain't seen nothing yet, boys. You ain't seen nothing yet. But we're not going to go issue by issue, all right? Because if we
we're
did...
not?
Damn.
No, they're going panel by panel.
Oh, yes. It'll be a raging bull.
Word balloon by word balloon. Pixel by pixel. We're going to...
Letter by letter. Oh, yeah. But, yeah, no, that'll be a lot of fun. And then, like I said, that's about two episodes down the line here. David D. and John Mayo coming back on to do that. And whenever you want to pop on, Wayne, just hit me up, man, and you're definitely back. So,
what are you doing tomorrow?
Yeah, maybe not.
But anytime, man. Thanks for the invite. I love doing it. And, you know, anytime.
Well, definitely, without a doubt, man. And let me wrap this baby up here before we all go and, you know, fall asleep on the air. So The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at cgspodcast.com/forum. Graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. Please vote for us on Podcast Alley. The links are in the show notes, and there is a listing of Podcast Alley listings on the Comic Timing forums you can go ahead and check out. And please dig us on dig.com. Same listing on the Comic Timing forums there as well. And please send us your iTunes reviews on iTunes. It sends a lot of press to the show, and it is certainly graciously appreciated from there. So, for Wayne and for John, I'm Ian Levinson, reminding everybody out there that there's always time for comics.
Well, now I'm really hearing an echo.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Wow.
I hear nothing.
I'm hearing the echo.
That is a major echo.
Holy crap.
I'm hearing me literally for a second time.
I'm hearing me too.
I'm just hearing me once, and that's probably enough.
All right. Test.
I'm still hearing the echo.
Yeah.
How's about now?
Test. Fuck.
Still hearing the echo.
Test. God damn it.
Hello?
Okay.
How's it sound?
So far, so good.
Okay.
Yeah, sounds better.
Okay, good. That's a plus. All right. Yeah, okay, good. Wow, this is actually a hell of a lot better. I hope it stays that way. Yay.
Yes.
What?
Don't even kid. Damn it. Wayne, what about you?
You know, I think that, that's what I think. You are
Time's
correct,
up.
Sir.
Well, that's about all today for Comic Timing. The bill has rung. Have your pets spayed or neutered. Goodbye.
Okay. All right. Bye.
I love reading comments that make me think and... comments. I love reading comments. Here's a comment from Smog. I love reading comments. Great. Terrific. Thank you very much. And we're out.
Cool.
Awesome.
That went really well.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun, man.
Oh, well, like I said, it's been a while, and this time we didn't have to talk about Civil War, so.
Has that finished yet?
No, actually. Dude, the fact that we get All-Star Batman and Robin and Ultimates in the same week, all right?
I feel like I'm in a time machine.
If they could have only gotten Ultimate Wolverine versus Hulk out, they'd have had the trifecta. They could have just stopped publishing at that point.
That and Daredevil Bullseye Target.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, see, that when that comes out, I'll be a grandfather.
Oh, man.
I guarantee you, Kevin Smith will already have died and will first get Bullseye Target.
Mm-hmm.
They'll find it in a case sitting in his attic somewhere.
I forgot about that, too.
Yes, well, now you remember. One issue, dude. One issue came out of like a 4-issue miniseries. One issue came out.
Yeah, I don't even think he's trying. I don't even think that's a blip anymore.
I don't think so either. I think he's moved on. I think he got paid and said thank you very much and ran out the window.
And that wraps up this syndicated episode of the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo, and I've been your host. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is podcast@comicbookpage.com. Thanks for listening.